This lesson would have originally been presented on Sunday morning, April 5th, 2020, during our worship period on that day. At that time, as we were reading through the Bible, we were in the book of Ruth, and our lesson draws from that text in a message simply entitled, God's Grace in Ruth. In the picture, you see the land of Moab, a contemporary photo, obviously, the land that Ruth came from. As we study our way through the book of Ruth, we're going to look at Ruth from two perspectives, prosaic Ruth and poetic Ruth. The word prosaic simply refers to the language that we use in everyday commonplace settings. The first thing that we want to notice is some things that you do not see in Ruth. As you read through the book of Ruth, you will not find any big name kings, priests, prophets, or cities. The only village that is of any significance in the text is the village of Bethlehem, the future birthplace of Jesus, the Messiah. As you read through the book of Ruth, you don't find references to enemies, to armies, to wars, to battles, to victories, to losses, or anything like that. That's all the sort of thing that you find in the book of Judges. As you open the book of Ruth, you will find out in the opening verses that it takes place during the same general time period as does the events that we see recorded in the book of Judges. The book of Judges covers a period of time about 430 to 450 years, and what we see recorded in the book of Judges definitely happened during that time period, but it's not everything that happened. What we see recorded in the book of Ruth was contemporary at some point during that 430 to 450 year time period. But what we see that defines Judges is not what we see that defines Ruth. You don't find any miracles in the book of Ruth. You don't find any divine appearances of God the Father or God the Son. You don't find any angelic appearances either. You don't find any major events. Don't find any cataclysmic, earth-shattering changes that take place within the few short chapters in the book of Ruth. You don't see any references to priests, to sacrifices, to worship, either public or private. Now, this does not mean that the people in the small village, the small hamlet of Bethlehem, didn't believe in sacrifices, didn't believe in worshiping God appropriately. The point is, that was not central to the message that we find in Ruth itself. You don't find any condemnation of idolatry. You don't find any condemnation of immorality or any other form of ungodliness, much of which we find front and center in the book of Judges and elsewhere in the Old Testament. You don't find any condemnation of failing to love God or of failing to love neighbor. The principles that are enjoined in the Great Commandments, love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's absent in the book of Ruth. Those things are simply not there. As we continue our study of the prosaic, common, everyday Ruth, notice some things that we do find in Ruth. We find common people. This is not to say that people who are uncommon, priests and kings and prophets, and people who are well-known, people of great wealth and stature, this is not to say that there's anything wrong with them. It's just that they are not front and center. They are not the story, the focal point that we find in the book of Ruth. You find Jews by the name of Elimelech, Naomi, Mahlon, Chilion, and Boaz, whose importance is found in Ruth and practically nowhere else in Scripture. We say practically nowhere else in Scripture because we will see that Ruth and Boaz will be referred to later in Scripture as they are in the seed line of Jesus the Christ, Matthew chapter 1. You see common people, Moabites, like Orpah and Ruth, the two ladies who married the two sons of Elimelech and Naomi, Mahlon and Chilion. You see normal circumstances. What do we mean by that? Remember, the absence of miracles, the absence of theophanies, the absence of war and all of those things. You see normal circumstances in the context of the book of Ruth. Things that happen physically, famine. Occasionally, there is a lack of rain and crops dry up and people have to go to another place in order to find food. We see that in the book of Genesis when the family of Jacob had to go to the land of Egypt because there was a famine in the land of Canaan. And we also see that in other contexts where famines prompted people to move to other places in order to seek food. Here, we see that Elimelech and Naomi with their sons, Mahlon and Chilion, go to the land of Moab because there was a famine in Bethlehem in the house of bread. You see people traveling to and fro. You see harvest and work. You see a great sense of community presented in the book of Ruth. You also see normal, everyday life events, things that we are very familiar with in our own lives, that we read about in newspapers that are local community-oriented all the time. references to marriages, to death, to sorrow, to hardships that people encounter and the bitterness that comes about as a result of that. So these are all normal circumstances. These are not special circumstances that we find only in the book of Ruth. We find them throughout the biblical text, normal, everyday things that happened then and happen now just as normally. We also see the poetic side of Ruth. Now, this is where the message of Ruth shines very strongly. What do we find in the book of Ruth? Well, we find those same common people that we referred to before, Jews and Moabites, but we see common people demonstrating something very different than what we see in the book of Judges. We see them demonstrating care and kindness and respect for other people in their community, and even people who do not come from their community. We see that exemplified in the character of Ruth. We see that in the village people from the city of Bethlehem, the Bethlehemites, generally speaking. We see that demonstrated in the life of Boaz, and we see that demonstrated in the life of Naomi. Just as a reminder, when Naomi and her husband Elimelech went with their sons Mahlon and Chilion into the land of Moab, when they were there, the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, married two ladies from Moab. They married Orpah, and they married Ruth. Over the course of time, Elimelech died, and the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, died. And after a period of time, Naomi determined to go back to the land of Bethlehem from whence they had come. Initially, both of her daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth, were going to go, but she encouraged them to stay behind. Orpah took her up on that suggestion and did indeed stay behind, but Ruth determined to go with her. Now, this is interesting. Ruth said, "Wherever you go, I'm going to go. I'm going to be with you, and your God's going to be my God. I'm going to be right by you all the way." And so when Ruth and Naomi come back to Naomi's hometown, not Ruth's hometown, the village of Bethlehem, everybody was excited. And what's interesting is everybody witnesses the care and devotion, the kindness and respect that we're noting here on Ruth's part towards her mother-in-law. And it attracts the attention of the people in the village. We see that the village as a whole was made up of a lot of very kind, respectful people. We see that demonstrated in how Boaz took care of Ruth when he found out who she was and he knew about the kindness that she had demonstrated to Naomi. He instructed all of his men who worked for him to watch out for her, to make sure that she had enough food to eat as they were working through the day, and to make sure that she was able to glean enough, to harvest enough sufficiently that she could take home with her. And we see that over a period of time developing in Naomi. Now we notice Mara first and then Naomi. Her name was Naomi, which meant pleasantness or sweetness. And Mara means bitter. When she came back to the land of Bethlehem after leaving because of the famine and going to Moab, she came back without her sons and without her husband. And so she says, "Don't call me Naomi anymore, call me Mara," because she was bitter. She'd lost three important people in her lives, husband and two sons. We also see an incredible sense of benevolence that's already been mentioned from the standpoint of the care, kindness, and respect that we mentioned. Ruth was very, very kind and very caring and saw to it that the physical needs of her mother-in-law Naomi were met. Boaz did the same thing by making sure that nobody harmed Ruth, that she had enough food to glean and that she had enough food to eat. And he asked his servants also to watch out for her. So this is not just him doing it himself, but also those who are in his employ doing it as well. You see that there's respect for principle that's brought out in the book of Ruth. And again, as it applies to all of these individuals, the principle was, "I'm going to care for you. I don't care what we're going to go through. I don't care where we're going to go. I'm going to be there with you." So Ruth was very principled in everything she did. It was the principles that drove her care, kindness, and respect. It was the principles that drove her benevolence for her mother-in-law. And we see Naomi has a respect for principle. One, from the standpoint of returning to her homeland and her sense of community that was there, but also the sense of relationship within families when she found out that Boaz was related to her husband Elimelech. Boaz is obviously demonstrated as a man of principle in that he cared for Ruth even before he knew everything that she was about. He knew enough to know that she showed compassion and care for her mother-in-law. And so he demonstrated a high regard for principle in that regard. And also with reference to the hereditary rights. When the near kinsman had the right to take Ruth as his own first, and to give land that would have belonged to Elimelech to Ruth's progeny and so forth. Boaz respected that in principle, and so did the kinsman, only he couldn't afford it. And so all of these things demonstrate something significant about people, imperfect people, obviously. We're not saying they're perfect compared to the people that we see in the book of Judges, but very common people demonstrating things that God wanted them to demonstrate. So we see them demonstrating lots of good things physically, but also we see a set of providential circumstances brought out in the context of the book of Ruth. It so happened that when Ruth and her mother-in-law Naomi come back, that it was harvest time. Now that's interesting. They left Bethlehem, which means house of bread. Beit Lechem means house of bread, when there was no food. So the name house of bread was meaningless during a time when there was a famine. There's not food there. That's why they had to go to the land of Moab. And so they come back to the house of bread when it's harvest time. So there's grain to be harvested. There's food to be made from the grain that they're going to harvest. And so those are providential circumstances as to what happens when they come back at that particular time. It just so happens that Ruth goes to Boaz's field. She did not know who Boaz was. Her mother-in-law did not know where she was going that day. She was knowing that she was going out to harvest, to glean, but she didn't know that she would end up in the field of a man by the name of Boaz, who, as the story unfolds, we find out to be related to Elimelech. All of these things are providential as the story unfolds. And we see that Boaz's protection also demonstrates all the things that we mentioned before about his benevolence, his care, kindness, and respect. And so he physically protects her because of a genuine concern personally for her and spiritually for her in this context. And so there are providential circumstances physically. Harvest, Boaz's field, Boaz's protection. And then there's a physical, spiritual, going hand-in-hand relationship that are interesting. The principle of the kinsman and the kinsman redeemer was such that if somebody was going to be without heirs, and in this context, Elimelech was out without heirs, his two sons, Malion and Kilion, died after he had died, and the only one who remains that's related to him by marriage, not by blood, was Naomi. And she has no physical heirs. She lost them. She lost her children when she was in the land of Moab. So in order to protect the land rights, the property rights, and the seed line of Elimelech, the near kinsman's job, as it were, was to take upon the responsibility of protecting property rights and protecting seed line protection for somebody who had lost both. And so, seemingly, Elimelech had lost that when he went into the land of Moab and had not returned, and now he has died. And now there needs to be a way by which that's going to be regained. And so that near kinsman precept is brought into play in order to protect what was important to God for the safety of Israel. Keeping property rights was a means by which they could continue to support themselves, and keeping seed line protection was also a means by which not only families were going to go on, but obviously key seed line protections from Eve, from Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, through David, and so forth, leading to the Christ, were also of significant importance. More about that as we go a little bit further. So these are providential circumstances that we see that are brought out in the poetic side of Ruth. As we go a little bit further concerning what we might find in the book of Ruth, we find a huge dose of faith. We mentioned this already. Faith in God is demonstrated by Ruth initially, how much she knew about who God was or what God was like, or how much she understood about the Old Testament scriptures up to this point. We don't know. We do know that her faith was rooted in what she had learned from Naomi and perhaps also from her husband and her father-in-law, both of whom had since passed, that is, the husband and the father-in-law. But she vows to let Naomi's God be her God. Where did all that come from? We don't know. At some point, Naomi had some degree of faith, went with her husband out of the land of Canaan and into the land of Moab in order to get food. So she had faith in her husband, obviously. She came back with a little bit of doubt in her mind concerning how God had cared for her. Lost husband, lost two sons, we mentioned that already. But later we see her faith grows. See the faith of Boaz and Boaz's servants. It's interesting, as Boaz goes to greet his servants, he says, "May God bless you, may God be with you." And the servants respond saying, "And the Lord be with you as well." And it seems to be more than just a common everyday greeting like hello, good morning, or peace, or anything like that. it seemed to be that there was a huge dose of faith that resonated in these people, Ruth, Naomi, Boaz, Boaz's servants, and so forth. We see that also demonstrated in the kinsman redeemer that we mentioned before, but also the witnesses. As the kinsman says, I can't do this, the nearest kinsman, I cannot redeem her, I can't take her as wife, I can't provide for property rights and so forth, and I'm not able to afford this. And so there was the ceremonial exchange by which Boaz was able to take that place. And the witnesses there also praised God as this was going forward, as did the townspeople who rejoiced at the birth of the child that's about to be introduced in just a little bit. And so there's a huge God-centric, faith-centric story that's told among these common people in Ruth during the time of the book of Judges. So what do we find in Ruth? We find a huge dose of faith in God by seemingly simple people, yet faithful people. Simplicity has nothing to do with whether or not they were deep or intelligent or educated or very savvy business-wise. It simply refers that they had a single-minded faith. We find a sense of new faith in the book of Ruth, in Ruth herself. She was raised in the land of Moab, and obviously, as a person raised in the land of Moab, she would have more than likely been unfamiliar with who God was. She may have heard about the God of Israel. She may have heard some principles and precepts and practices about the God of Israel. But from our perspective, all that we know is that her faith in Jehovah God was new to her. We also see a renewed faith in God presented in the person of Naomi. She had faith to begin with, being raised in the village of Benjamin, presumably that was the case. But when she came back, there was a sense of lost faith, lost hope, because of the sufferings that she had gone through, losing the two sons and her husband and so forth, and coming back only with the daughter-in-law, Ruth, she didn't know what she was coming back to. Was she going to be able to inherit the land that had belonged to her husband? Or was that going to be made possible? None of those things we know. But as the message unfolds, we see that she moves away from being called bitter, Mara, and becomes Naomi, the pleasant person once again. And her faith in God is restored because of the unique relationship that forms between Boaz, a relative of Elimelech, and Ruth, her Moabite daughter-in-law. So there's new faith in God on Ruth's part. There's renewed faith in God on Naomi's part. And there's continued faith in God on the part of almost everybody else, on the part of Boaz, the servants, the witnesses, the townspeople, and so forth. It's like this was just going on all of the time. And so that's a refreshing story. There is not always that element of new, renewed, and continued faith that dominates what we see in the context of the book of Judges. So this makes the poetic side of Ruth, the spiritual side of Ruth, that much more positive to understand. As we think about the book of Judges and the book of Ruth, again, both of them going on in the same general period of time, that 430 to 450 years, as we think about what goes on in the book of Judges versus what goes on with Ruth, we see that there's a very strong contrast between physical-oriented message in the book of Judges, these battles, these losses, these hardships. Now, they're all happening because of spiritual deficiencies on the part of many of the tribes. But it's spiritual, physical problems that come about as a result of spiritual failures. And in the book of Ruth, there are some physical hardships. People have to work. There was a famine at one time, no longer, but there's a focus more on spiritual things and blessings that are coming about because of people's simple faith and obedience. And that brings us to the next point. There's a huge dose of disobedience brought out throughout the book of Judges, and we see a huge dose of obedience that's reflected in the context of the book of Ruth. Additionally, we see this message in the book of Judges. We see that there was no king in Israel, and as a result, everybody did what was right in their own eyes. We see that four times in the text, in Judges chapter 17, verse 6, 18:1, 19:1, and the final verse, chapter 21, verse 25. No king in Israel versus the coming king in Israel. Well, what do we mean, the coming king in Israel? We mention that in the book of Ruth, at the very beginning, there's no well-known or important kings, priests, or prophets. That's right. They don't exist in the story, in the context of what we see revealed in Ruth itself, but it's anticipated in the closing verses of the last chapter. So no king in Israel versus the coming perfect king in Israel. And that coming king in Israel, as we've just anticipated, is the perfect king over Israel and the world, who is ultimately going to be Jesus, the Messiah. So what we see that dominates the book of Judges, sorrow and sadness, sin, and the consequences of sin everywhere, is absent in the book of Ruth. And we see a message of hope, a message that closes not only with a marriage, Boaz and Ruth, and the potentiality of future offspring, Obed and Jesse and David, that's going to lead to Jesus. All of those are good things. But we see a message again of God's grace, of God's hope, of God's mercy reflected in the lives of these people in the village of Bethlehem, the city where David was from, the city where Jesus would be born.